This is a free speech radio news Memorial Day special documentary presentation, Iraq, 1 year later, on Monday, May 31st, 2004. In New York, I'm Deepa Fernandez. Over a year ago, on May 1st, 2003, President George Bush co-piloted a fighter jet onto the aircraft carrier the USS Abraham Lincoln off the coast of Southern California. There, behind a giant banner reading "Mission Accomplished," he declared a victory for the forces of liberty and peace in the world. He told the assembled troops, "Because of you, a tyrant has fallen. Because of you, Iraq is free."
The Battle of Iraq is one victory in a war on terror that began on September the 11th, 2001, and still goes on.
But a year later, the situation on the ground in Iraq is collapsing. On the one-year anniversary of his speech, President Bush was forced to defend himself.
A year ago, I did give the speech from the carrier, saying that we had achieved an important objective, that we had accomplished a mission, which was the removal of Saddam Hussein. I also said on that carrier that day that there was still difficult work ahead. And we faced tough times in Iraq, Mr. Prime Minister. We've had some tough times. And we've had some tough fighting because there are people who hate the idea of a free Iraq.
Many hundreds of U.S. troops have died on Iraqi soil since George Bush made that speech. During the same time, soldiers in America's Coalition of the Willing have killed more than 7,000 Iraqis. Photographs have surfaced showing severe torture in America's Abu Ghraib prison, where occupation forces hold some 15,000 prisoners for supporting the resistance. In this special Free Speech Radio News Memorial Day documentary, we'll be taking a look at how the U.S. occupation forces succeeded in alienating the majority of Iraq's 25 million people, a people who overwhelmingly supported America after the removal of Saddam Hussein. Our correspondent is Aaron Glantz.
A few days after George Bush declared the U.S. military had succeeded in toppling Iraqi President Saddam Hussein, an American military Caterpillar vehicle fills the newly excavated mass grave next to a wheat field just outside the Iraqi town of Hilla, an hour and a half's drive south of Baghdad. For almost a month after Saddam put down a Shiite rebellion in 1991, busloads of prisoners were taken to this field three times a day. Tens of thousands of skeletons have been pulled from the ground, many of them bound and blindfolded. Now, with Saddam Hussein removed from power, Shiites are coming from all over Iraq, sifting through the dried bones, hoping to find their loved ones. Thousands of bodies have been claimed, but not everyone was able to find their family. This woman is looking for her son, Ali. "Where are you, Ali?" she cries as she sifts through plastic bags full of skeletons. "I've come here. Where are you?" "I want you," she cries. "I love you." This man was looking for his son Laith and his wife's brother Haider Ibrahim. He had nothing but kind words for America's current president. Like many Iraqis, he directs his anger towards George Bush Sr. At the end of the 1991 Gulf War, the elder Bush called on the Iraqi people to rise up and promised American support for their revolution. But when the people of Iraq rebelled, the American president withdrew his support and allowed Saddam to engage in a mass slaughter of the Shiites of southern Iraq.
"The first Bush is the reason of this mass grave and what happened for all Iraqi people from 1991 until now. Because if they finished Saddam in 1991, nothing would have happened and we would have been safe."
It wasn't just Shia who celebrated the fall of Saddam Hussein. Sunni businessman Shahnam Abu Jaber's father and older brother were executed by Saddam's government. He remembers watching American and European anti-war demonstrations on television in the run-up to George Bush's bombing campaign.
We said, "Thanks a lot, but shut up. After they get rid of Saddam, you can go ahead and make your big movement, but now just shut up." They didn't know anything. They didn't live here and know the truth about Saddam. Nobody can imagine what Saddam did with his people, only the people who lived here. Maybe if we had stayed under Saddam's regime, we would have all been killed.
But a year later, Shanam Abu Jaber, like most Iraqi people, has changed his mind about the occupation of his country. Many of his relatives have joined the resistance. Some have been arrested and are being held at the now notorious Abu Ghraib prison.
It's the same struggle as under Saddam's regime. Now it's been rebuilt by the Americans themselves.
He says a year after the beginning of the American occupation, the U.S. military has proven to be a harsh military overlord. He's also upset at the lack of electricity, employment, and clean water, all of which were in greater supply under Saddam's regime.
The military mind of the Americans didn't know how to deal with the resistance. They didn't know how to control them or to make them on their side, because it's not just a matter to have a gun and fight. It's a matter of our thoughts. We will join the resistance by our thoughts for all the people who are unable to fight. The women, the children, and young men didn't want to fight, but they are against the Americans because of the way the Americans behave toward the resistance, how they go against the resistance.
For many Iraqis, the moment of support for the resistance came in April, when the U.S. military invaded Fallujah, a Sunni city of 200,000 on the banks of the Euphrates River, west of Baghdad. For 25 days, the United States Marine Corps bombarded the city, killing at least 600 civilians, wounding thousands, and turning tens of thousands of Fallujans into refugees in their own country. The stated goal was to apprehend resistance fighters who killed four American mercenaries and hung their dead and burning carcasses on the old bridge in the center of town. Those villagers were never apprehended. 11-year-old Yusuf Fakhri Amash escaped Fallujah with his family, but not before the U.S. military killed his best friend.
Ahmed, Safri, Azam, Andy, John Rogafi, Al Hayat,
Ahmed was in my class. He was younger than me. He was standing next to the wall of the secondary school. He was trying to cross the road and he was hit by a bullet. The American troops fired the bullet. Americans shoot us on the street. They even bombed our school. We are innocent kids. We can't play on the streets because of the Americans.
This footage was taken by independent filmmaker Julia Guest, one of the few Western journalists who gained access to Fallujah during the American bombardment. She accompanied a team bringing medical supplies into Fallujah during a ceasefire. The picture accompanying these sounds is of an old woman in a hospital bed, a U.S. Marine's sniper bullet in her neck. Clinic director Meki Alazar.
They say there is a ceasefire. They said 12 o'clock, people went out to do some shopping. Everybody who went out was shot, and this place was full, and half of them were dead.
Julia Guest describes another elderly woman shot by American snipers during a ceasefire.
When I arrived, I found a woman who I think was in her 70s who had decided to try and help her sons get out of the city. They decided to leave as a family group. And so she'd taken the decision to walk out of her front door waving a white flag because they knew they were in a very heavily, there was a lot of shooting in their area, and she was shot in the stomach and the foot.
Filmmaker Julia Guest says the clinic's ambulance was shot twice by American snipers, also during the ceasefire. The second time the ambulance was shot, it was carrying American and British citizens who had negotiated an agreement with the Marines to rescue the injured from an area with heavy U.S. sniper fire.
Now, it has blue sirens. It was donated from the Kingdom of Spain. It's very clearly an ambulance. It's carrying oxygen bottles. And the damage to the ambulance was such that two of the wheels are totally wrecked on it now as well. So they were left without an ambulance after that.
After 25 days of siege, the U.S. military stopped attacking Fallujah, allowing locals to begin burying their dead. A team of local volunteers in surgical masks lift the rotting corpse of a middle-aged woman from its shallow grave in the front yard of a single-family home. The owner of the house explains the woman has been lying dead in his front yard for 3 weeks. He says an American warplane bombed her car as she fled the city with her husband, who is buried in the garden of the house next door. The destroyed remains of the car still smolder a few meters away from his front door. We couldn't give her a proper burial, he says, because every time we would go outside, American snipers would shoot at us. They even shot at us when we retrieved her carcass from the car after the Americans bombed it. In the meantime, aid workers say many corpses continue to rot under buildings which collapsed on top of them amid a hail of American firepower. The volunteers place the woman onto a gurney and take her away in a small pickup truck. In a half hour, she is buried in the municipal football stadium, alongside 600 others killed in 1 month by the U.S. military. At the football stadium, a young man pours water on the dusty grave of his sister as an American warplane flies overhead. A new trench has just been dug by locals, working in coordination with neighborhood mosques. When new bodies come in, they are placed in the trench, covered with dirt, a slab of concrete placed above. 30-year-old Fadl Abbas Klaff helped bury the dead here for 5 days before he picked up a gun to fight the U.S. military.
Some of the soccer teams came and played here before. The city graveyard was very crowded and the Americans cut the road to the city's main graveyard so we could not reach it to bury the dead people. Sometimes we would bury two people in the same grave to save space.
With relatively less bombing, area residents have begun to file through the graveyard looking for their loved ones. Among them is 50-year-old Ahmed Saud Mohsen al-Issawi, who returned to Fallujah after 3 weeks as a refugee. He says he found two cousins, aged 18 and 13, buried in the stadium. But Ahmed Saud says he hasn't been able to find the body of one of his nieces, who also died in the U.S. military assault, nor has he been able to locate any of her 8 children who went missing after her death.
Every day the Americans show us that Saddam Hussein made many mass graves. My family stayed in their house and didn't go outside, but they're still dead. Resistance to occupation is normal. How could they do this? Even the little children and families are dead.
But amid the stench of death, there's also a sense of victory in Fallujah. Young Mujahideen fighters carrying Kalashnikovs and RPGs tour the city on tops of cars and motorbikes to cheering onlookers. If anything, the American assault seems to have turned more civilian residents of Fallujah into resistance fighters. Ibrahim Hassan is 40 years old. During the bombing, he fled the city with his wife and 3 children. An American bomb had destroyed his neighbor's house and killed 3 people inside, but the final straw was when he was shot by snipers during the ceasefire as he went to get food aid from a neighborhood mosque. Now, for the first time, Ibrahim Hassan says he's going to pick up a gun and fight the Americans.
When I saw my neighbors, their house had collapsed on their heads. In all of the streets where I live, all the houses were destroyed, and I will take revenge on the United States until the last breath that I have.
Another small crowd gathers at the remains of the neighborhood mosque. Two craters caused by American airstrikes have filled with raw sewage. Despite the destruction all around them, most of the men gathered here feel they've won a hard-fought victory. Ayat Abid Abbas was among the crowd.
For 25 days, they used everything they had, tanks, planes, helicopters, and many other kinds of weapons, everything. They couldn't enter this heroic city.
The sheikh of the mosque, Abdul Qadir al-Isawi, goes a step further. He says images released of American soldiers torturing Iraqi prisoners at Saddam's old prison, Abu Ghraib, show that suffering and cruelty are the norm under U.S. occupation.
This torture will not pass without punishment. This is against our dignity. That's what the residents of Fallujah say.
Sheikh Abdul Qadir al-Isawi is hardly cowed by the fury unleashed after the killing of four American mercenaries, whose dead bodies were dragged through town and then hung from a bridge. He says a similar fate will meet the members of the U.S.-appointed Iraqi Governing Council if they fail to respond to allegations of brutality against incarcerated Iraqis.
I swear to God that we will pull out the members of the Governing Council and we will hang them on the old Fallujah Bridge. Those are men who brought Americans and this destruction, and they will hang on the doors of all the houses of Fallujah.
There is no God but God, and America is the enemy of God, hundreds of families chant at the gates of Abu Ghraib, once Saddam Hussein's most notorious prison. Now it's where the American army incarcerates people for supporting the resistance. The prison has become the center of scandal, with new photographs of severe torture released almost daily. One photo, obtained by the New Yorker magazine, shows a dead inmate wrapped in cellophane and packed in ice. Another photograph shows an empty room at the Abu Ghraib prison, splattered with blood. Brigadier General Mark Kimmett, speaking after American television, first showed images of Iraqi prisoners naked and hooded.
What would I tell the people of Iraq? This is wrong. This is reprehensible, but this is not representative of the 150,000 soldiers that are over here. I'd say the same thing to the American people. Don't judge your army based on the actions of a few.
But that explanation isn't accepted by most Iraqis with relatives incarcerated at Abu Ghraib. Standing in front of the cyclone razor wire fencing that circles the prison, Tariq explains his brother is behind bars along with his 73-year-old father. Both have been imprisoned for opposing the occupation.
This wire is democratic, and this concrete is the freedom he coming.
Tariq says his father, a senior sheikh from the ancient city of Samarra, suffers from high blood pressure and diabetes, but has received no insulin since he was arrested 8 months ago. He says he hasn't been able to see his brother, so he has no idea if he's become a victim of U.S. torture. Hours after hundreds of people marched on Abu Ghraib prison, the situation has returned to normal. As under the reign of Saddam Hussein, scores of Iraqis huddle outside the gates of the prison, hoping for a chance to see their loved ones. Few of the families waiting outside Abu Ghraib have been granted a visit, and many of those with loved ones in American custody have not even been told where their family members are being held. Zahara Ibn Ali's 26-year-old son was arrested by the U.S. military a year ago in a raid that also destroyed her house. She's heard rumors that American troops killed him, but she hasn't yet given up hope.
I've been to every prison in Iraq, in Tikrit, Nasiriya, Umm Qasr, Balad, Basra. Whenever anyone tells me a place, I will go there. I have sold everything, and I am even ready to sell my pots, because I don't have any money to go anywhere anymore. It's not a problem if they just give me the dead body of my son. If he's alive, they have to let me see him. And if he's dead, they have to bring me his body.
Across Iraq, victims of the American penal system are easy to find. Saad Sultan Hussein is a lawyer with the Iraqi Ministry of Human Rights, appointed by the Bush administration.
The major problem that Iraqi people suffer from is the random capture by the U.S. military. They are disappeared and no one can tell where they are or the reason for their capture. They even don't allow the families to visit them. And the Geneva Convention says they must allow the families to visit.
Saad Sultan Hussein estimates the U.S. military is holding 15,000 political prisoners at Abu Ghraib. The Pentagon says it is holding more than 7,000 more prisoners of war at a prison built in Umm Qasr near Basra. The mighty Tigris River runs through the center of Abu Sifa, a farming village an hour's drive north of Baghdad. Cattle graze on the side of the road and date palms sway in the wind. But something is missing in this quiet paradise. The men. Almost everyone in the village is a woman. 9 months ago, the American army rounded up 73 men from this town. Villagers say the Americans didn't find the arms caches they were looking for, but the soldiers did confiscate several trucks and large sums of cash. 9 months later, 15-year-old Amattar Hassan is one of only two villagers to have emerged from custody.
For the first 6 days, we were all staying in an open field surrounded by razor wire. There was no tent and no mat underneath us, and we were all exposed to the sun and rain. There was no toilet facilities, so we had to relieve ourselves out in the open. It was impossible to sleep. Every night, the American soldiers threw pebbles at us all night long.
Eventually, Ahmed says he was transferred to Baghdad's Abu Ghraib prison. There, he was held in solitary confinement, in a 3-foot by 4-foot cell, the same cell used to keep political prisoners during the reign of Saddam Hussein. He says he was not allowed outside to exercise. He says he was not allowed to see his family and not allowed to see a lawyer.
At night, they threw a dog in the cell to frighten me. It was kind of a wolf dog, a police dog. One of the soldiers just entered into the cell every night. Every night, it was a different soldier and his dog. And finally, a Japanese man from the Red Cross visited us. I talked to him. After that, they stopped bringing the dog.
After 9 months in prison, the American military released Amattar Hassan, never charging him with any crime. Again, Saad Sultan Hussein, lawyer for the American-appointed Iraqi Ministry for Human Rights. He says the occupation force promised to allow his agency to open an office at Abu Ghraib, but so far the Americans have only given his teams guided tours of the prisons.
I only have seen what they wanted me to see. We didn't enter the room for interrogation. We were not allowed to witness any interrogations.
A report released in March by Amnesty International condemned the occupation authority for not allowing independent monitoring of the prisons. The human rights group also alleges prisoners are regularly subjected to sleep deprivation, hooding, and bright lights. Statements confirmed in graphic torture photos made public since the document's publication. In addition, the human rights group criticized the methods occupation troops use when they arrest Iraqi people.
Early in the morning, they took us from the home and asked us to stand around.
In the village of Abu Sifa, Amattar Hassan's house has been reduced to rubble. His mother, Reja Mohammed Hassan, stands in front of the rubble that was the house and describes the U.S. military raid.
When we asked them, the Americans started to beat the women. After that, two tanks came to our house and started to shoot using the machine gun on top of the tank, and then two missiles from the head of the tanks.
This demolition is hardly an isolated incident. In its March report, Amnesty International documented at least 15 confirmed cases of house demolition by occupation forces. Abdul Rahman Abdul Razak Hassan is a former Iraqi army general who was purged from the military when Saddam Hussein became Iraq's president in 1979. He hasn't been allowed to see his 3 sons, who are all behind bars at Abu Ghraib. He's also angry about the way they were arrested. First, he says, the American army destroyed his house.
If you want something, you just have to knock on the door and ask. You don't have to come this way. They bombed the door. They destroyed all the furniture and took every paper in the home, the IDs, the money, the gold, the diamond. They didn't leave anything. And then he said, it's not you we are looking for, it's your sons. We are very sorry, and I told them this sorry is not one that is paid in cash.
After that, Abdulrahman says, the American military turned its attention to his farm, attacking it with Humvees, tanks, and bulldozers.
And they didn't find anything until they destroyed my whole farm, and even the farmhouse there. It's all worth about $1 million. I have 19,000 chickens worth $250,000. They're all gone now. The Americans killed them.
Sheikh Ahmed Yahir al-Samarai has a brother and two sons incarcerated at Abu Ghraib. He explains how two of his sons, who run an auto parts store in Baghdad, were arrested by the American army.
They surrounded their shop and arrested them both. Also, they took two cars. One was a new Mercedes and the other a Toyota pickup. They also took American dollars from the shop and Iraqi currency, and they took all the copy books, and they broke everything in the shop.
Now Sheikh Ahmed Yahir and his wife are doing their best to raise 5 grandchildren on their own. They haven't been able to visit either of their sons, but they have been able to piece together a picture of life in Abu Ghraib from a few who have been released. Sheikh Ahmed Yahir's wife, Omar.
Even Saddam Hussein didn't treat people as bad as the Americans. They left them 3 days standing without any food. They're holding them in a tent with lots of other people, without electricity, and the only water is warm water.
But as angry as they are about the imprisonment of two of their sons, their feelings can't compare with how they feel about the death of a third son at the hands of the American army. Sheikh Ahmed Yahir explains what happened when two of his sons were stopped by U.S. soldiers en route from Baghdad to the northern city of Samarra.
They told them to get out of the car. Then they ran over the car with a tank. At 1 a.m, the Americans took them to the dam over Samarra. The water is very quick there and very powerful. The Americans told them to jump into the Tigris River. You know, it's a place where if you throw a piece of wood, it will shatter into pieces. One of my sons survived, but the other one was found dead in the river 14 days later.
The American army has sent a note of apology to Sheikh Ahmed Yahir and his family and paid $6,000 in compensation for the destruction of the family car. But there has been no apology for the death of one son and the imprisonment of two others.
You've been listening to a Free Speech Radio News special documentary presentation by Aaron Glantz, Iraq, 1 year of occupation and resistance. Special thanks to Julia Guest, who provided sounds from Fallujah, James Longley for sounds from Najaf, and Ungji Khan, who helped conduct many of the interviews in this documentary. Our technical production team is Jade Paget-Seekins and Eric Klein. To purchase the full DVD of this documentary, complete with video and still images, please visit our website at www.fsrn.org. In New York, I'm Deepa Fernandez.